Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing on this fine day?
I'm good, mate. Still reeling from the barberside chat we had on last Thursday's show. No, Wednesday's show. We're out on Wednesday, aren't we? Even I can't get it right, for crying out loud. I'm usually the one who knows what days the shows are coming out.
Too much barberside.
I've got no excuse. Too much barberside. It cleans the mouth. It looks a bit like mouthwash, but oh, it messes with the brain, I tell you what.
For those of you that missed the previous podcast, at the end, Pete revealed the word barberside, some sort of disinfectant that barbers use. I don't even remember how he got there. I decided it's my new favourite word, barberside. I thought it meant like homicide, but by a barber. Barberside. Killed by
Maybe
Natsuki.
It does. I don't know. I mean, he's got the tools. He's got a lot of sharp implements. When Natsuki finally flips, we're in big trouble.
Oh, God. Speaking of tools, just before coming on this podcast, I was reminded of something I saw on Twitter the other day. We obviously, this podcast is heavily linked to the technology of fax machines. And somebody raised the point on Twitter that maybe the samurai could have had fax machines, because the first fax machine was invented in 1843 by Alexander Bain, the first electric printing telegraph. And the samurai existed in some way, shape or form up until 1867. So there was about a 20-year gap where the samurai crossover could have interacted with a fax machine. What are your thoughts on this, Pete?
Now, have you come up with this? Because this sounds like pretty random thing to me.
It's amazing. Samurais with fax machines.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, the Edo period, 1867. So if you're 43, yeah, that kind of works, I suppose. I mean, the 1843, the picture that you've put in the running order for a fax machine, that is not the first fax machine.
Well,
there's a
not.
Telly in it. There's a telly built in it, for fuck's sake.
But electric printing telegraph, that is technically a fax machine by definition, surely.
Yes, exactly. Obviously, I think I spoke about this earlier in the week. The footballing world was a buzz with the chat that Lionel Messi, the world's greatest footballer, probably, he said he was going to be leaving Barcelona by Burofax. So people were like, going, oh my God, I can't believe there's faxes happening. I can't believe football still uses faxes. I mean, football famously still uses fax machines, but Burofax is a slightly different thing where send a document via PDF to a company. I think it's the Spanish Postal Service. And then they print out and legally fortify, or just basically make it clear that it's been sent by a certain date, and then mail or hand deliver hard copies of that data to whoever needs them. So it's a slightly different thing to a fax, but I think that's why everyone's talking about fax machines, and people are quite surprised that the Japanese still very much use faxes.
I must admit, though, I've still never used one myself. I've seen them being used when I worked at the school when I was a teacher for 3 years. There was one a few desks away, and I witnessed it being used, and I was in awe of this ancient technology, because I think it got phased out in the UK in like the 90s or something. But well, have you actually used a fax machine? Have you used one yourself?
Yeah, I've used it. I mean, in the last 10 years, I've probably used it twice, and it was all down to you'd be in a situation where you would use one of those big bloody photocopiers or printers, you know, the ones that are like absolutely gigantic, yeah, like the size of a washing machine, and it's connected to everybody's computer, so you can scan and you can you know, convert to PDF and copy and print and all that stuff. That has a fax, that's a fax option as well. It's still, you still see them every now and again. All I remember from fax machines, certainly when I used to work at XFM, which was the last time I saw a normal kind of tiny little fax machine, was every morning printer toner companies would send like so many adverts for their printer toners, so many adverts for their office supplies through the fax. And you'd just be like picking up pieces of paper. Such a waste of everyone's time, honestly.
I just hope. I mean, the next phase now is to try and find a photo of a samurai interacting with an electric printing telegraph to get confirmation that a samurai used
that it happened,
the fax machine. That's the next level, isn't it? We've got to find, we've got to get that photo. If you're listening in, guys, one of you, someone out there, please go on Google and spend a considerable amount of time researching this and get us this photo. Get us the photo of a samurai with a fax machine. And while we're on the subject
Ghost
of fax
Tsushima machines, DLC.
Ghost of Tsushima DLC, fax machine edition. And while we're on the subject of fax machines, that is also the topic of today's podcast, because as you know, every now and then, once a month, we do turn our attention to the fax machine, because we have so many interesting messages, questions, stories sent in by you guys that build up over time, and now it's time to unleash what we have within. And this week, we thought we'd focus primarily on stories from travellers around Japan, things that have happened, wacky and crazy stories. And what have we got first, Mr. Donaldson, in the fax machine?
We've got one from Steve, and there is a PS attached. I've not read the rest of the email, but the PS starts, "I assure you, I look nothing like Richard Gere." So it's going to be a good email. Strap yourselves in. Hi, Chris and Pete, avid watcher of the Roger on YouTube channel and diligent listener of the podcast since at least the beginning of this whole pandemic thing. As with many listeners, I had 2020 plans to visit that sort of went down the drain back in March or April, but I'm hoping to return whenever things get a little bit more under control. In the meantime, these shows will help to fill that void. Anyway, listening to the recent episodes on the hospitality of Japanese people to foreigners, I wanted to chime in with a somewhat related story from my trip to Japan back in April 2017, which I think is a mix of friendliness and some strange Japanese people mixed together. It was my first visit to the country, and I tried hitting up all of the key tourist spots from Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka, and Hiroshima all the way down to Fukuoka as well via JR Pass on a drizzly morning in Chikushino, the suburb where my wife's family's from. My then fiance and I got invited to hang out with a nearby temple to eat and drink with a bunch of locals by her eclectic distant aunt. We've all got an eclectic distant aunt, haven't we? Everybody at the Shrine was in their 60s and 70s, and being the lone 30-year-old white guy anyone had probably seen since the 1990s, they preferred calling me Richard Gere rather than remembering my actual name, which is Stephen. What I like about that is Richard Gere is in his 60s now himself. Anytime they called out for Richard Gere, they'd be filling my glass with beer. Maybe it was like Cockney rhyming slang for beer, Richard Gere. And my plate with food. And honestly, it's not the worst white person to be stereotyped as. So I just played along as not to complicate things. Going on the trip, I had no idea I'd be spending day drinking with a bunch of retirees in a small town, as well as being deemed as the star of such films as Pretty Woman, Hachi, and Shall We Dance. Now for the weird part. After we'd gotten our share of food and drink, the strange aunt pulled us over to the shrine to pray for our recent engagement and upcoming marriage, where at the conclusion of the 100 yen coin tosses, bows and claps, the drizzle, rain and ceased, and the clouds parted for the sun, causing the aunt to start exclaiming how it was a fortuitous sign and how she knew I was a good person and nearly started crying. Maybe it's true. I don't know. I mean, we're married now. Either way, it was definitely an experience. Probably something I'll never forget. I can't wait to go back and make more memories like this. And honestly, being cooped up for the past 6 months working from home has made me seriously considering transferring to the Japan branch of my company, even if my Japanese is still horrible. Anyway, thanks for the hours of entertainment each week. And please keep it up, Steve. P.S. I assure you, I look nothing like Richard Gere, not even a younger Richard Gere. Have you had Japanese people give you a celebrity name, or are you too famous already? Wow. And did you have any experience getting pulled into any sort of pseudo-spiritual activities? I'll give you my quick ones. It was who's the naughty boy from naughty little boy from Harry Potter? Slick back hair, bit Draco. Blonde. Him. Draco Malfoy. That's
like
all
him.
I had, really. I do when I got my hair slicked back. They just focus on one thing.
That's true. I got called Daniel Radcliffe, so we could be part of
Harry
Potter
enemies.
Spin-off.
Yeah, I like it.
I've been called three names: Daniel Radcliffe, Tom Cruise, and Tim Roth of Pulp Fiction fame, and every other Tarantino film.
Oh. I'm allergic to you saying Tim Roth, sorry.
It's a weird bunch of celebrity names. That's just such a bizarre story. I wonder how they just got to Richard Gere. They looked at Steve and thought, oh, he's white. Let's just call him Richard Gere. I'm perplexed by the fact the aunt started crying at rain as well. It's all rather unnerving.
It looks amazing, though. If you're at a temple and you do some prayers and then suddenly the rain stops and the sun comes out, come on. That's exciting.
Actually, you just reminded me, my first week in Japan, I went to a shrine to commemorate the atomic bombings of Hiroshima with one of my teachers, who was a very nice guy, very spiritual. And we went to a shrine, and we went, I think it was like 8 o'clock in the morning when the atomic bomb went off. It was very early, sometime between 7 and 8, I think. And we prayed, and there was a Buddhist guy, and we prayed and hit some bells and whatnot. And then just as the ceremony ended, it just started to pour rain. And that felt quite significant. That was the first time I've kind of had that feeling. After praying for the atomic bomb, it just started to rain, like I think it did in Hiroshima on the day. So that was quite unnerving. So that's the closest I've had to that experience, Steve. But fortunately, I've never been referred to as Richard Gere, although Daniel Radcliffe is that. I suppose Daniel Radcliffe is better. Not so sure about Tim Roth. I'll run with Tom Cruise, though. I like that one. Not
yeah,
so sure about Elon
one,
Musk
fine.
Either. Get that one too much as well.
your use of the word commemorate. Again, I'm picking you up on stuff. Commemorate, is that the right word to use, Chris?
Well, commemorate the terrible events of that day.
Yeah.
To remember. To commemorate.
I thought commemorate
to remember,
is more like to sell it. Yeah, it is to remember, but also show
lives.
Respect for.
Yeah, to
yeah,
show
okay.
respect
commemorate
for the
loss of life. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Certainly wasn't a celebration.
You can have it.
I can tell you that much.
You can have it.
You got one from Johnny, who says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. I just watched your video on how Google Translate can go horribly wrong for Japanese, and I thought I would share my own bad experience. I used to get a Japanese snack box delivered every month with lots of delicious goodies inside, and one month it came with a drink called Milky. I cracked open the can. And it tasted as delicious and as milky as the name implied. After quickly polishing it off, I noticed some sort of slogan in Japanese next to the logo. So I got Google Translate out and used the camera function to see what it said. To my horror, the slogan translated as the milky taste of mother. What? It must be a bad translation, I thought. But ever since then, the horrifying feeling has never left me. Did I neck a can of breast milk? I know that Japanese cuisine has delicacies that seem odd to us Westerners, but surely this is a step too far. So please, Chris, translate the slogan for me and put my mind at ease as to whether or not I drank a stranger's milk. Yours nervously, Johnny. P.S. Here's a photo of the drink. I can't remember which section of the text gave me the bad translation. I was too distracted to take notes. And I'm looking at the can, and it's got this Japanese girl, cartoon girl, with her tongue sticking out. Cheekily out the side of her mouth, and it says above it, "Milky wa mama no aji," which literally does translate as "the milk is the flavour of mother milk." Yeah, it literally is what he said.
Yeah,
worryingly.
Wow, I mean,
the flavour of mother.
It would be a bit of a swerve, wouldn't it, for one of those kawaii little Japanese snack boxes to suddenly go. Right, January, we're going for the taste of the Hokkaido plum. February will be the matcha of Kyoto, and March will be tits. just be so fucking weird.
I mean, it's an inappropriate thing to stick on the can, though, isn't it? I think it's kind of,
no.
You know, it's a reference to
Milky's like a candy company, isn't it? Like,
it is, Milky candy, like milk flavored candy. I don't think it's breast milk, so don't worry about that, Johnny. But you're right; it does say the flavor of mother. So technically, in that sense, Google Translate did it right. Google Translate was accurate.
I'd love to see like a sort of Don Draper in Mad Men sort of going, talking about, you know, we're not selling
We're not selling boob juice. We're selling the idea of boob juice and being a child and looking up to your mother and going, just this resource page going, sorry, Don, are you seriously considering me selling boob juice? Because I don't think anyone's going to care for this.
Capture the nostalgia.
Well, obviously, weightlifters drink a lot of that kepa, don't they? Any sort of marginal gains they can possibly get.
Milky.
Now they'll drink the breast milk. They'll drink breast milk because it's full of nutrients. Yeah, it's really good.
A fact I didn't want to learn today.
Enjoy your dinner, everyone.
Got one from Helen. I'll let you have that one. I take a swig of my coffee.
Yeah, boob juice. Helen says, hi, Chris and Pete. I was staying. I mean, it's a very milky coffee, presumably, for someone of those cans. So, you know, it's a bit weird drinking cow udder juice.
Get on with the story.
Helen,
let me drink my coffee.
Hi, Chris and Pete. I was staying with my friend who was on the jet program. I've gone to oat milk, thank you. I was staying with my friend, very wasteful, water wise. Anyway, I was staying with my friend who was on the jet program in Osaka back in 2005. I decided to stay from June to September, which my friend had kindly neglected to tell me are the worst possible months to be in Japan. So my enduring memory is being hot and sweaty and wondering when the rain would stop. I was with an American jet in a train station waiting for some others to arrive to go into Osaka to celebrate the 4th of July. As we were waiting, a tiny old man came up to us and started talking in perfect English. He asked us where we were from, and we said we were American and British, respectively. Once he learned I was British, he ignored my American friend completely and told me excitedly that he'd loved Britain and he was so glad to see me. He then went on to say that he'd been a spy for Britain during World War II and he's proud to have helped the Allies win the war. Wow. Then without another word, he walked away. I often thought about him during the rest of my time in Japan, and thinking back, I wish I'd been confident enough to ask him more questions and find out more about what must have been a fascinating life. Keep with the good work. I love listening to the podcast and watching the videos. I had a trip to Tokyo planned for October, which has sadly been cancelled, but I hope to be in Japan soon, or back in Japan soon. I think that's going to be a lot of people's plans, I think, as soon as the flights start going back. Helen, thank you for your email, mate.
I mean, I'm a little bit sceptical, but the numbers do work. 2005... that's a 60-year gap between 1945, isn't it, and 2005. So could have been a spy.
He'd have to be in his 80s, wouldn't he?
Would have been, yeah. But it's just the idea of going up to someone and being like, I was a spy. All right, bye. And like, what interaction is that?
You haven't got better at it, have you?
That would be really interesting, though. I'd love to hear his story, even though, I don't know if he'd be around now. But like, how did the British kind of get a Japanese spy? You think that would be really difficult given the loyalty of Japanese soldiers and whatnot. I wonder how that went down. That could be a film unto its own. Could be a film unto itself. Japanese spy.
Yeah. Was it the Dulwich boys or something? There's a story about the Dulwich boys who were like a set of young men who were conscripted in the army in the Second World War, and their job was just to learn Japanese. And it was a defector. Oh, it wasn't even a defector. I think it was a Japanese restaurant owner who lived in London. His wife would teach them how to speak Japanese and how to decode what the Japanese were saying and stuff. But obviously, like, there's one thing kind of there's one thing decoding messages, and then there's another thing figuring out what the flip everyone's talking about. So fascinating. I think it was the
Dulwich
boys,
or
Woolwich boys, maybe.
There's no Milky to translate
exactly.
That then. Well, there might have been. Imagine that. Mean. This is what the enemy is drinking on the battlefield.
It would have been rationed.
Rationed mama's milk. Good God. Well, what a cool story. Why haven't I met a Japanese spy? I've lived it 8 years. I'd love to meet a spy.
Two words for you. Natsuki.
Natsuki. The ninja. Barber by day, ninja by night.
Yeah.
Natsuki Aso.
Spy 24/7.
Can of mama's milk in his pocket.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Hi, I'm Nicole Goodman.
And I'm Lauren Mishcon.
In 2020, self-care can seem like yet another overwhelming job for women.
Every week, we test out a new kind of self-care so you don't have to.
Firstly, can we just clarify how we pronounce it? Kombucha?
Kombucha.
Yeah.
Kombucha. Kombucha. Self-care club. Wellness road tested.
So that was the first day. You know, it was just the not slipping into the complete default mode of what I normally do, which is have a go at my husband for what he hasn't done. And, you know, all of that stuff, I kind of stopped.
Okay, so it was more the absence of meanness rather than the projection of kindness at this initial point.
Yes.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
This week, we are testing out menstrual cups. How are you feeling?
Dreading it. I know that you love to give a practice that's all about down below. I'm not interested. I've never even really thought about it since before I met you.
Never thought about your vagina until you met me.
It doesn't get a lot of air. It doesn't get a lot of air time. No, it doesn't.
The Self-Care Club is a Stakhanov production.
We got one from Kim. Kim worked at an American theme bar in Osaka, and this is their story. A revolving a Japanese YouTuber who had a rather chaotic evening. It says, "Hey, Chris and Pete, love the podcast, and I wanted to send you a bizarre story of my own in the hope that if you read it, you might have some insights or opinions on the complete madness of the situation I once found myself in. I'm not sure if it counts since I was living in Japan and not traveling at the time, so this probably isn't something a tourist would experience, but it's amusing and possibly disturbing nonetheless. I used to work in an American-themed restaurant in Osaka. It was a small place, and occasionally we would get hired out for private parties like birthdays and office dinners, but usually by friends of the owner. The majority of our staff are foreigners with varying levels of Japanese, which I guess is important for context. We were a little bit surprised one day when a YouTuber with no connection to the bar rented it out for a small live performance for his fans and followers, but we rolled with it. The booking was a little unusual because rather than just ordering a fixed set dinner or giving drinks tokens with an entrance fee, the host brought whole bottles of alcohol, champagne and tequila from us to sell on. Some people sell merch. This guy was letting his fans buy him a tequila shot. God, that's a bold move, isn't it? Confusingly, the organizer asked us to substitute any tequila shots intended for the YouTuber with oolong tea, since it looked like tequila, because he didn't want to drink too much. At first, I thought this was kind of shady, but I quickly realized why. I'd absolutely no idea who this YouTuber was, by the way, and I still don't. All I know is he's a singer, and at the start, he first did his show and sang a few songs. There was such an odd collection of people in the room, a group of young, quiet-looking university girls who hovered around in front of him all night, a family with young kids, a 40-year-old woman who was kind of buriko style. It's a girl who tries to pretend like a child or kind of acts really cute. And there was a bunch of rather macho-looking skinheads. Bloody hell. What kind of music is this to attract such an audience? Once the show was over, the socializing began. First, everyone got a glass of champagne. They gave a toast and the YouTuber went around to greet his fans. Then everybody got a tequila shot and said cheers. Then the fans started buying shots. So many shots. It was absolutely horrific. First, only a few individuals asked for a small tray of shots to down with the YouTuber. It seemed fun and quite jovial, but the crowd increasingly became bold and started to order trays full of multiple shots for the YouTuber to drink as a dare. We tried to pour oolong tea in as many of the shot glasses as we could, but we couldn't send out a mixed tray in case someone found out some of them were tea. Good God. In the final one, a man ordered 10 shots for the YouTuber to go down in a row. The fans stood at the bar staring at us, telling us to hurry up. So only 2 or 3 of the shots could be filled with tea. All of us working at the bar were staring on in horror at what unfolded. I can only guess that in true Japanese drinking style, they were only trying to not only spoil the YouTuber lavishly, but also get him to drop his tatemai, his kind of public face, and be real with the audience and give them his real opinions. But to us, it just looked like they were trying to kill him. The shy, quiet university girls were completely legless and hanging off of him. He was being bought shot after shot, looking increasingly uncomfortable, but had to be polite to everyone. He went to stand by the door, which was a little bit hidden, to check on some things and got a breather. But then the lady in her 40s came up to him, also drunk, cornered him against the wall, put one hand up his shirt and tried to stuff money into his hand with the other. He politely declined her with a small smile on his face, saying he was too drunk. The lady promptly burst into floods of tears at his rejection and cried for the remainder of the night. Thankfully, the show had come to an end and everybody was thrown out at 10 o'clock. We counted that in total his fans had bought him 28 shots of tequila, and I think only 15 of them were actually tequila. he could barely stand, and as soon as all the guests left, I brought him a glass of water and asked him if he was okay. We let him sit as we cleaned up and he phoned his girlfriend. I just found this whole experience to be fascinating and creepy. I mean, I guess the YouTuber profited off of it, but at the same time, his fans seemed kind of toxic. The fans were desperate to get him to stand his guard down like a weird kind of ownership, but the YouTuber managed to defend himself, armed with Japanese manners, and he was pleasant to them all, but reject them without actually saying no. I find it ironic that the only people who ended up seeing his real kind of personality were us, the staff. We didn't have a damn clue who this guy was. Cheers, Kim. Bloody hell. That tells you a lot about
the price of fame.
The price of fame, celebrity culture, drinking culture as well, right? Like, I've been out to things like this and I've been forced to drink unfathomable sums of alcohol and I had no protector there to pour oolong tea in instead of tequila.
No.
What do you make of it?
When we did live shows for the Football Ramble, we were in Chicago, and there's a drink called some kind of weird, almost medicinal drink that is native to Chicago. It's a famous Chicagoan drink, right. And that kept on getting put in my hands. And I drank it. Let's make that very clear. I was happy. I was happy to drink it. But can you imagine being someone who's just a solo performer, so to speak, who is just dominated by a room full of people who just wants to, get the real person, and I'm not comparing my level of small level of fame to whatever he had, but it just sounds, this whole story sounds, this sounds very much Chris, like the Chris Broad story. It sounds very much like it could have been you, because this is your life, mate. This is your people stopping you in the street. Do you want a drink? Let's go for a drink. I don't want to go for a drink. I'm busy.
I have had things like this happen. Luckily, I've had things like this happen, to be fair. You've got to be very careful when you are kind of like a public figure and people know who you are, because people are very kind and nice. They will buy you loads of drinks and be really awesome. I've had some rather bizarre situations like this. Like, I remember I was stumbling through Sendai once after a party, trying to get home, and I was already quite drunk from this work party, and I bumped into two viewers, and they were like, Chris, you got a drink with us? And I was like, okay, one drink. And they bought me like 10 drinks, and I just got really drunk and made a terrible spectacle of myself in Hub, the British themes like pub, and it all got rather unpleasant. But that was a few years ago. I learned my lesson that night. But you've got to be careful in a public environment where lots of people know who you are, though. I remember we did an event with Natsuki once, like a kind of a meetup event in Tokyo 3 or 4 years ago. And after the event, you know, we were going to go off for dinner, Natsuki and I and the few organizers who helped organize the event. But Natsuki, being Natsuki, he was like, come on, everyone, you should come too. And this little private gathering, this post-event gathering with the organizers and Natsuki and I, turned into like 50 people coming. And it all got really out of control. It was fun, though. It was quite fun. You've got to be careful. You've got to be careful when you're like well known who you are. So I'm not surprised that enjoyable happened. But yeah, Japanese fans, they will ply you with staggering amounts of alcohol. It's especially dangerous if you're a foreigner, because they'll see it as a challenge. They think like foreign folks are...
I want to drink you under the table.
Well, yeah, they'll think you're invulnerable, indestructible. And that's not the case, speaking from experience.
No.
Dear. We got
lovely old job. We got an email from Morgan. Hello, Morgan. Hi, Chris and Pete. I recently discovered a YouTube channel and podcast, etc. Looking forward to moving to Japan next year. On your recent podcast episode, you shared a story about a guy being invited to dinner at an izakaya, and it made me so nostalgic and reminded me of my first experience in Tokyo when I traveled to Japan last year. I thought I'd share that story with you. My arrival in the Japan was preceded by a breakup and a long, uncomfortable sleepless flight from Vietnam. Oh, dearie me, Morgan. This was my sixth country in 2 months of a 3-month solo backpacking trip across Southeast Asia. That'll clear the heart and clear the head, won't it? And I was already exhausted, switching from a different language and currency every couple of weeks. And now I face the daunting task of conducting official business in a foreign country where I didn't speak the language. Tired of having only myself to rely on for the past couple of months, I asked the universe to take the reins. I couldn't steer anymore. I wanted someone else to take over things for me so I wouldn't have to think or plan or struggle on my own. Basically, I wanted a guardian angel. My first night in Tokyo set the stage for my month-long journey in Japan. I mean, that's just to have a month. I'd bloody love that. That'd be fantastic. As I was silently weeping into my okonomiyaki, not my proudest moment, I must say, but I suppose post-breakup emotions combined with travel burnout can reduce even the strongest moment to tears. At a tiny outdoor restaurant in Asakusa, a man approached me and, speaking only in Japanese, motioned for permission to sit down next to me. Usually open and happy to meet and talk with new people, I was too tired and in too crappy a mood to chat with anyone, much less expend the energy I was sure it would take to try and communicate through mime and gesture with this man who clearly didn't speak English, but I acquiesced. He smiled and he sat, continuing to speak in a language I clearly wasn't comprehending. Then he surprised me. Slowly, he took my chopsticks from my hand and gently set them down, called over the waiter, paid my bill, stood up and motioned for me to follow him. Most people would not do what I did. In fact, most people would and did call me crazy or naive or reckless for doing what I did next. But being the free-spirited hippie that I am, I thought, oh, look, here's that guardian angel I'd asked the universe to send me. And so, of course, I let him lead the way. We came upon a little izakaya, and as he slid the door open, it was clear that this was purely a local spot for old Japanese men, where everyone in the place knew who he was and was wondering, who the heck is this white chick? We sat and ordered a delicious meal, accompanied by some of the best sake I had ever tasted. The owner was so excited to have an American in her bar and, coerced by shots, had me singing ABBA with her into the wee hours of the morning. Sometimes you just have to learn to surrender and say, Jesus, take the wheel. Other times you just got to follow strange men down dark alleys into hole-in-the-wall bars and drink sake and sing karaoke all night. Good God, Morgan, please only do that in Japan. This is my first experience in Japan. It made a wonderful first impression and set the tone for the rest of my trip. Some fantastic little pictures as well. The man in the sake bar. It's one of those bars that have got a lot of kind of famous celebrity visitors' signatures on the wall. They have those kind of like perfectly square, white, bleached pieces of cards that are pinned to the wall with famous people saying, thanks for your hospitality. Fantastic stuff.
It's a lovely story, isn't it? The idea that you go into
a bar. It's a lovely story. Scary, but lovely.
Could have gone a horrible direction, but yeah. That's nice. I like to think that the guy in the photo, the guy that whisked her away to this restaurant, he looks, must be in his 80s. I like to think that's the Japanese spy, or the British spy. The
Do you
Japanese
reckon? Yeah,
British
yeah,
spy.
Maybe.
That's
with
him.
With his big linen suit jacket on.
He does look the part. No, you never know who you're going to meet at these izakayas. You never know what's going to go down. And I often say to people, like, it's a great place to meet people, somewhere where you've got a bar counter. And if Morgan was at an okonomiyaki pancake restaurant, you do typically sit at a counter, right, and watch it get prepared in front of you. So it's a great place to meet people. So that's, yeah, people often ask me where to meet people in Japan. If it's not Hub, it should be an okonomiyaki restaurant at the counter. And you might meet Japanese spy man. I wonder how they communicated, though. She said he didn't speak English, right?
Yeah.
He just took the chopsticks out of her hand slowly and put them down. That's when I read, when I heard that, I was like, uh-oh, where's this story going? Good God.
Yeah. It's the universal language of karaoke and booze, really, isn't it?
It certainly is. Good old ABBA. You can't go wrong with ABBA at karaoke.
Right.
I've turned to ABBA many times at karaoke. Yeah, lovely story. Have you met anyone like this in izakaya? Have you ever had your Japanese spy man moment, been whisked away?
No. I think I've been in a situation where all blokes have chatted to me all night, and you know, and my mates, and yeah, everyone's really, really friendly. I've never followed anyone into down a dark alley to a weird bar, and I wouldn't recommend anyone doing that.
Probably good idea.
Outside of Japan.
I mean, this was in Asakusa, which is quite a nice. It's quite a relatively touristy neighbourhood in Tokyo, and people there are quite friendly. I think if it had been Kabukicho, then it might have been a bit more risky. But well done, Morgan. I'm glad you had a good time.
Yeah.
And that made up for a thoroughly unpleasant journey to Japan. We've got one here from Trace. Trace says, hi, Chris and Pete. I have two things I'd like to say to you guys. Number one, Pete, even though I'm just a bloke from the United States, I can understand everything you say. I really don't know what Chris is getting on about. Wait a minute. I haven't said Pete is indecipherable.
Not for a while. Not for a while, anyway.
I've said it in the past. Early on, I did have some difficulty understanding Pete. But now I have acclimatized after 100 episodes in 2 years.
Yeah.
I finally know what you're saying, and it's magical.
It's never anything about the actual accent or anything. It's just the fact that I mumble quite a lot. So I've got a relatively strong accent, as the UK goes, and I'm also a hell of a mumbler. But I do enunciate when I need to.
Enunciate. I mean, and we do learn interesting phrases like "Why I man." That was.
Why I man?
That was a good phrase.
Exactly.
Never know what you can learn from Pete. It's like mastering a whole new language. And Trace also says, point number two, Chris, will there ever be a way to get a Leica Magic t-shirt again? My son and I want one so bad. Keep up the good work. Thanks for the podcasts. Your mate from the States, Trace. What I'll say is, Trace, that I for like 2 or 3 years, we had the merchandise store, the Abroad Japan merchandise store. and sales just declined to nothing. So I shut the store down, and then everyone was like, where's the t-shirts? Where's the merchandise again? So I've actually relaunched it recently, quietly, on Teespring. So if you just type in Teespring Abroad Japan, you can find the secret merchandise store that I will get round to promoting one day. I like to keep these things a secret. Not really sure why. Given it is a merchandise store, I probably should promote the damn thing. In the same way I failed to promote the Abroad Japan Patreon page for like 3 or 4 years. That was a bad move as well. But yeah, Teespring, Abroad Japan, whack that into Google and you will find the Leica Magic shirts you desire. You'll be one of the chosen few to find it, along with the listeners of the podcast. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back in the next few days, guys, to do it all over again. But for now, no matter where you might be, out in the big wide world, stay safe, have fun, and we'll see you in the next few days. Bye, Pete. Goodbye. I feel like I cut you off, didn't I? I just whip this out. I end the fun. Say something profound, Pete. Yeah. Say goodbye.
I'm your mate from the UK.
That's all we need.
And a t-shirt.
The end.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.